Bill 2847, and Representative Merkley, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Representative Jeff Merkley, here today to testify on HB 2847. This bill establishes a 3-day rescission period on contracts for the purchase or placement of manufactured homes. A rescission period is a common and effective consumer protection device. It is well understood that in response to an enthusiastic sales pitch, an individual may put his or her signature to a contract without a full understanding out of the ins and outs of the transaction. And that is particularly true when you have a complex transaction such as the acquisition of a home and the siting of that home in a manufactured housing park. A cooling down or reflection period helps to ensure that the transaction, which may be for the consumer a major life decision, stands up in the light of day. I'd like to share with the committee examples of how rescission periods are currently utilized in Oregon law. I believe that this chart has been distributed to the committee. This chart, called Comparison of Contract Cancellation Provisions, lays out a number of situations in current law. It shows that we have four condominiums, a 5-day cancellation period. For timeshares, a 5-day period. For membership camping contracts, a 3-day period. For home solicitation sales, these are sales on your doorstep, a 3-day period. We often call this the pots and cans law, mainly because my sister acquired a set of pots and pans shortly when she was out of high school at the doorstep, and the 3-day rescission period came in handy after she realized what she'd actually signed up for. We have provisions for new cars known as a lemon law. We don't use a rescission for cars because once you drive a car off the lot, its value drops several thousand dollars. If one was to return a car after 3 days, you would have diminished the value and it would be unfair to the seller. So instead of using rescission period, we use the lemon law. Home sales do not have a rescission per se, but they have effectively a de facto rescission. I had my staff go out this morning to a stationery store and buy a standard owner's sale agreement, an earnest money receipt agreement, and I've also attached that in your package. I asked my staff to highlight a clause that is common to every housing contract I've ever seen in our state and in others, and it notes that a purchaser may have the property and all elements and systems thereof inspected by one or more professionals chosen and employed by the purchaser. And in the key language, if an inspector reports the presence of a material defective condition, the purchaser may terminate the transaction by delivering to seller written notice of purchaser's disapproval of the inspection report. Notice must be delivered within blank business days, and it notes it's 7 if not filled in, after the date this agreement is made. In the situation where you're buying a home, you have the option, and most people avail themselves of it, to have an agent representing the buyer, yourself. And that agent is pledged their loyalty under the law to you as the purchaser. And one of the things that they do is they review the contract in detail and help to point out provisions that help protect your interests. This is a key one because this clause basically says you can walk away for any reason you want based on dissatisfaction with the report. It doesn't say if you express a dissatisfaction with the report and the seller agrees to fix it, you're still in the contract. It says you can walk away from the contract. It is a de facto rescission clause that you as the buyer can increase to any number of days that you want. The seller obviously has to sign the contract as well, so they may or may not accept the contract, but it is a common practice, common and accepted practice. Then, to return to my chart, I note that refinancing agreements have, under federal law, a 3-day rescission period. And then we get down to the purchase and siting of manufactured homes. and the fact that there is no such provision of any kind in Oregon law or in federal law, giving the same opportunity, and yes, a very similar transaction to the type of transactions that we've been speaking about, a major life decision for people about choosing to acquire a home and choosing to site a home in a park. I'd like to now refer your attention to the bill itself. The bill addresses two scenarios, one in which you purchase a new or used house for placement in a park, that is, the house at that point is not in the park, and the second is the purchase of a manufactured house that is already in a park. In both situations, you have what is often a three-part agreement. You have a purchase agreement, you have a rental agreement, and you have a mortgage. And those three are often developed in very close concert with each other. And so this makes this even a more complicated transaction than the sort of transaction you have in buying a normal residential stick-built house. This bill is a conservative bill. First, it only affects manufactured houses that will be sited in a park. It doesn't impact houses that would be sited on your own property or in any other situation where you're not renting the land. Second, it's a three-day rescission and not a five-day or seven-day rescission. And folks have asked me, well, is 7 days the de facto standard period is 7 days using the inspection clause on stick-built houses, then why shouldn't it be 7 days here? And if it's 5 days for things such as condominiums and 5 days for timeshares, why shouldn't it be 5 days here? And I'll tell you, I'm just a very conservative person, so we just made it 3 days. But if this committee would like to amend that clause and make it more in keeping with similar transactions, you'd find no protest from this quarter. Third, the purchaser can waive the rescission if he or she takes a class, and this class will be prepared by the Department of Housing and Community Services. So, in fact, if someone's shopping, I, as a seller, as a park owner, can indicate to the person that they might want to take this class so that when they find exactly what they want, they can immediately close the transaction and close the loan. And fourth, there is not a rescission disclosure statement in this bill. There probably should be. There are in several of the other rescission or cancellation clause periods. Obviously, the rescission period is of no value unless people know that it exists. The purchase and placement of a manufactured house in a park is a very complicated transaction. For many families, it will be the most complicated transaction they ever undertake. Moreover, it will, for most families, be one of the most important financial decisions that they make. The least we can do as a legislature is to give a family a short period to make sure it understands the transaction. And colleagues, if we can afford this protection to a consumer purchasing pots and pans on his or her doorstep, shouldn't we afford the same protection to a family purchasing and siting a manufactured home? I'd like to thank you for the chance to testify, and I'd also like to add an additional comment. I have passed out, or hopefully there has been passed out, an amendment. And this amendment has been passed out. It's a very simple amendment. You all have. This addresses a question that the chair asked me about, and that is that there is some language in this bill that's simply unnecessary, and that language is in Section 1, line 7 through 15. In line 7, the clause for the rescission is constrained to a situation where a park is owned by the dwelling seller or by a related party. We're not sure exactly what led to that language being in here, but the drafter thought it was at my request, and I'm not sure if I sent a model bill from another state or something of that nature, but it really shouldn't be there. It's unnecessary. It should come out, and all the additional language from 11 to 15 that defines what a related party is unnecessary. Whether the two parties are related or not should not affect whether a person has a rescission power for this type of purchase. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Garrard.
Representative Merkley, you explain the last paragraph of the summary in regards to a class concerning manufactured dwellings and parks that we're going to require the Housing and Community Services Department to develop? Is there an estimate on what the cost of that is? And just a simple why did you add this to this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Garrard, thank you for that question. This actually came out of a conversation I had 2 years ago. 2 years ago, I had a similar bill, but it had a bit longer time period involved. And the comment was that this would really disrupt the flow of events. And so the idea was to enable a consumer to waive the rescission and not to interrupt the flow of events if they wish to do so, to provide a mechanism to do that. And with a three-day period, it really isn't as important. Perhaps it would be more important if this was changed to a seven-day period. But that was the thinking. The other thinking was, is it would be nice to be able to advertise to a consumer that such a class was available, because in this situation, the buyer is not represented by a buyer's agent. So unlike in buying a stick-built house, there is not a built-in education process with somebody representing your interests. So to be able to encourage people and let them know that there is a class available, and this class might be as simple as a one-hour videotape that they could acquire through the mail, overnight mail, so on and so forth, or that park owners and sellers of manufactured housing could have available to hand out. In this situation, it would be very helpful for them to be educated to some of the rudimentaries of the transaction they're undertaking by an impartial party, and that's the reason this is in here.
Follow up. Jeff, if I'm reading this properly, and a buyer had a deal all set to go and wanted to waive the three-day, they would not have the personal right to do that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Garrard, that is correct. The 3 days is there for their protection, and it is a brief period. They can waive that period in advance by taking the class in advance, and that's another reason is to have the class is to give the buyer flexibility. But there are few park purchasers who understand all the ins and outs. I think I'd be much more comfortable if we were to have a situation where a buyer is represented by a buyer's agent who could stand up for their interests and explain to them the key factors on such an important decision, but we don't have that arrangement.
That's basically what you're asking the state to be. I mean, we're actually guarding the rights or the decision-making process of the buyer, aren't we?
Mr. Chair and Representative Gurr, we are in fact protecting the consumer on a major life decision from something they'll regret the rest of their life if they don't understand the contract. Of course, we're not providing them the same protection that a buyer's agent does, who walks them through the contracts and the key clauses, but at least we give them 3 days so that they can wake up the next morning and say, now, I asked a question that really didn't get answered about whether or not I'll be allowed to have a pet in the complex, or a question that was asked about whether or not I'll be able to park two cars in the driveway, or a question about whether there was a clause that keeps that caps the rent on an annual basis, or a question about whether the state regulates the rent, or many, many of the questions that come up in this context. And so it gives them a day or two to look up some people who know the answers and make sure that what they have done when they were all very excited right after hearing how beautiful the house was and how beautiful the park was, is the right decision.
One final follow-up. I'm certainly not at issue with the three-day representative. I'm just trying to convince myself that offering a class and making a three-day waiver contingent upon that of the buyer is something that the state of Oregon should be involved in.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garrard, I don't feel passionately about this, but I do feel that it's a reasonable improvement over not having a class. Even if it wasn't attached to the rescission period, having a primer of some sort prepared by the Ombudsman's Office or the Department of Housing would be very useful for people who are considering this sort of transaction. The state does provide a lot of consumer information in a number of areas, warns them about lead paint and so on and so forth. To be able to have such a videotape or a class available would be very useful on its own merits, whether or not it was tied into this.
Thank you. For the questions, Representative Walker.
Thank you. Representative Merkley, and my name is on here, so I'm supportive of the idea, but I do have some concerns about the same thing that Representative Garrard brought up, the class. My view of the class is that the person who is going to waive their right to the 3-day rescission and takes the 1-hour class, would the state then, through the Housing and Community Services Department, be lulling these people into thinking they know everything they need to know about their rights in a 1-hour segment or a 2-hour segment, whatever it might be, and then they will not, with great care, look at what they're signing and then later come back and sue the state? They say, well, we took your class, we thought we knew everything we needed to know, and then the state is sitting here in a position of having assumed some liability. And I see that as a real concern, and I don't think we as the state of Oregon need to be putting ourselves in a position of not allowing a person to purchase a property and then setting ourselves up to assume the liability. And I think perhaps, I mean, I agree with the 3-day rescission, because sometimes people go to purchase these homes when sometimes they've experienced a life crisis of some kind. They've lost a loved one, or they've had to move or whatever, and they go and enter these contracts and don't really know exactly what to look for even in the contract. And if they think they're going to go take a class, it's going to help them get through that, and then they make a mistake by waiving that 3 days. I just would like to see that part eliminated, and that way they still have the 3-day rescission if they want to learn about purchasing. You know, there's a lot to know about loans, a lot to know about agreements and parks and properties. So I would just like to see something like that occur rather than putting us in a position of liability.
Mr. Chair and Representative Walker, your point's well taken. I think this would be a stronger bill if the 3-day period was not waivable. Quite frankly, the reason I attached it to a class was because if a person can waive their 3 days without something that intervenes, like a class, then a person is very vulnerable to the same forces that they are experiencing when they're all excited about the contract. And the seller may say, I will give you, if you waive your 3 days, I'll give you an incentive. We'll throw in X, Y, or Z. Or may say, you know, that 3 days will really foul up the works. We need to have all the pieces coordinated, and it's very important to just sign all the pieces and have it a done deal right now. I'm sure you understand the deal, and so forth. So I think waiving the 3 days was a tip of the hat in the direction of flexibility, but I think it's a stronger bill if we do not have that waiver ability in there, and I think that would be certainly reasonable to take it out.
Thank you.
We go back to the subject of the rescission being non-revocable. It's an automatic 3-day rescission. Your thoughts on that? You'd probably like that.
Mr. Chair, are you...
No class whatsoever. It's a built-in 3-day rescission period. No conditions.
It's simpler. It probably provides more protection. It doesn't provide as much. You lose the fact that you're advertising that there's resources available for the person to consult with, but that advertisement could be contained in a disclosure or in some other method.
Thank you. Further, Representative Garrard.
Just more of a statement, Representative Luke. Maybe some kind of written information to be given to the prospective buyer at the time of sale, explaining the 3-day rescission and perhaps some of the the key ingredients or whatever would have been incorporated in that class, something in a written document that they could be presented at that time might be sufficient as far as, I do feel somewhat of an obligation on the information side to make sure they're aware of what their choices are. I join Representative Walker. I would just soon see that eliminated, but I also can understand making sure that the people are informed, which I think is your intent here.
Yes. Mr. Chair and Representative Girard, that is exactly my intent, and I think that your comments follow on a point I made in my testimony, which is that this bill doesn't have an end-to disclosure statement about the 5 days or about any other resources that a person might want to turn to gain additional information. Attaching such a disclosure or information that perhaps the state would prepare an information packet that would be given along with the disclosure to a potential buyer would be very, very useful and wise consumer information and consumer protection.
Thank you.
Further? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Barnhart, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Phil Barnhart. I'm the state representative from District 40, South Eugene. I had intended to make several points about this bill, but Representative Merkley has covered them, I think, extremely well. And I simply note that I am also a co-sponsor of the bill, and I would commend it to you.
Thank you. Questions? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
I think I would like to, at this point in time, have Gene Ebersole here, please, from DOJ. Welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, sir. Chairman Wilson, members of the committee, my name is Eugene Ebersole. I'm an Assistant Attorney General for the Oregon Department of Justice. I have worked there since 1989 exclusively in the Consumer Protection Section. I have recently served as a member of the Attorney General's Manufactured Home Task Force, chairing the Subcommittee on Financial Matters. And I am eminently aware of all of the problems that have faced the manufactured housing industry. I do not have a copy of the amended bill, so I'm a little bit unprepared for that part of my to understand that the part about related parties is stricken and that it strictly will apply to any manufactured housing transaction, but only to rented spaces.
Yes, that going into a part.
Right. The Attorney General supports this bill wholeheartedly. In listening to the comments before by Representative Markley, I would agree with a couple of things that have been brought out just from a perspective of the corresponding laws that are on the books and how they have worked. In Oregon, we have a 3-day cooling off period for door-to-door sales and for telephone solicitations. It mirrors the federal cooling off rule, and there is no waiver. I think that the waiver might have been a gesture to the industry as a good-natured gesture to try and give them some benefit, but the problems have increased exponentially over the years in manufactured housing transactions because they have over the years evolved with the industry. 30 years ago, we were used to the old mobile home that was had pink flamingos and was clearly able to be put on the back of a pickup truck and taken from space to space, and the industry has evolved to become a viable and very wonderful segment of the society in furnishing lower-cost housing to new home buyers. And I have found from my 12 years in the Department of Justice that the majority of the people selling these homes are excellent, honest, and straightforward business persons. But the transactions themselves have become extremely complex because the low cost of these homes is no longer low cost. We now have double and triple wides being moved into very complex rental properties that carry with them substantial amounts of financial burdens over and above the manufactured home. The manufactured homes you could read in the paper sometimes are still, you see these ads for $28,000, $30,000 homes, which seems very, very inexpensive. But when you move into one of these rental properties, especially if it's a newly developed property, a large number of covenants and restrictions will come with that property in many occasions that now are very costly. I know when my 78-year-old mother moved to Oregon in 1975 in Beaverton, she moved into a little single wide. I think it cost $200 to hook up the water, another $100 maybe to hook up the electricity and the rest of the utilities. The driveway was already in place, and they just had to pull it in, throw the skirting on, and you're ready to live. The utilities and all those expenses now are extremely expensive. It goes into the thousands of dollars to hook up these homes. You may many times be required to put in a matching garage, which is attached to the property and which you are required to pay for. You may be required to put in elaborate types of porches or other types of additions to the home. What is even more interesting is that if you are a regular real estate developer for a stick house, the developer is subject to all types of fees that the community tax on to the developer for the infrastructure of the community as part of the development costs of that. And these costs now are being transferred over by the rental owner properties to these first-time buyers that are literally no value to them financially. This is one of the things that came up in the task force that came out over and over again, was this large sum of money that the community requires for the developer of the property, that now that amount of money could be amortized over, you would think might be amortized over the life of the property, is now being tacked on to this first-time buyer. And so you have what they call the park package, the sort of buzzword. So you have this park package, and you have all these additional things, an enormous amount of money. So these are homes that aren't really $28,000 homes. I mean, you look at the average one, it's probably going to run closer to $100,000 plus. And to require somebody to have to sign on a dotted line, and just as the wood to buy a used car on a used car lot down on 12th Street here in Salem, to incur all these fees, which may or may not be disclosed clearly, because unlike the motor vehicle area, there is no disclosure rule for manufactured homes. I have worked with the industry, and we are very adamant about working together with them to develop such disclosure rules, but there are none on the books right now. So you have an enormous amount of complex parts of a multifaceted transaction. Besides the park package, there could be moving costs. There could be all kinds of other additional permits and costs. And the other part of the equation that fits into this is that the segment of our society, our citizens in Oregon, that are the most frequent purchasers of these homes are first-time buyers and senior citizens. So we have a particularly gullible, not gullible, but what would be the proper word, excuse me?
Vulnerable.
Thank you, sir. Vulnerable segment of society that one is, on one case, is inexperienced, and on the other side is trusting. You know, our senior citizens come from a different generation that a handshake was sufficient to sign a contract. So we really need to protect them, and I think that they're. When you look at this transaction, it's not like a car that's being driven off a lot. A good, honest, reputable manufactured home salesperson, business owner, really has nothing to lose to wait 3 days. These transactions are very big, complex transactions. The odds of it closing in 3 days are probably not going to happen anyway. So it allows 3 days for the consumer to consult with family members, with legal counsel, or just to think about it. And I think that there's a reason why the cooling off rule, both federally and state, does not have a waiver. I think that we don't want it to be waived. When they go in to sign documents, you know, when you buy a car or a house, most people aren't going to sit and read 50 pages of documents. It's going to be sign here, sign here, sign here, sign here, sign here. I think it's admirable to encourage state powers that be, the manufactured home ombudsman and others, to have an educational program. I'm sure that Attorney General Hardy Myers is already thinking in those lines. We do as much as we can with our hotline to help people. But I like the idea. I support it wholeheartedly. I think that the waiver is probably not a thing to do. On your typical three-day cooling-off period, your form will have a tear-off sheet at the bottom, so that when you sign, you'll have a typical. It would be viable to have a form with a nice tear-off sheet. So if they want to waive it or want to cancel, they have the form already drafted. They don't have to draft letters. It could be required in fashion in that manner.
Excuse me, Representative Doyle, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, Mr. Ebersole, on I guess the process of a transaction with a manufactured home being different than a stick house, I think it's been called, is, and I'm just not aware of that process. Is it different in that, you know, unlike a stick house that you make an offer and then there's a period of time for closing the transaction that people are just, you know, they walk into a manufactured home park and it's like immediately they're signing all the closing documents for purchase of the home, or is there any time in between that they're making these decisions?
We're probably talking about two types of transactions. The market right now is really in crisis due to some tiered financing shenanigans that went on over the past few years. So there is an enormous amount of foreclosed houses in place on property now. So if you were to walk into a matter of fact, I don't think you would probably walk into a park. You would go to a mobile home sales lot. You see them on the Bonanza and Palm Harbor on the freeway as you drive up and down I-5. The transaction is much more comparable to a motor vehicle transaction than it is to a stick-built transaction. In a stick-built transaction, the common occurrence is that both sides would have a realtor. You would view the home. You would talk about the home. You would then make an offer on an earnest money. In addition to the earnest money, most earnest monies in and of themselves are a rescission clause built in. That is, if you put down $1,000 on an earnest money, you would be able to just forfeit your earnest money and walk away from the transaction. Such a rescission is not available on a manufactured home. So it's much more like car dealers than it is realtors.
Mr. Ebersole, thank you. I would just say I appreciate your testimony. I'd like to give you about a minute to sum up, and then we'll move ahead. And if you'd stay close, if you've got the time,
I will, sir.
Appreciate you doing that.
I really don't have anything else, Mr. Chairman. I think that I've summed it up. I will stay available if anybody wants to discuss some of the things that came out in the task force findings. I think the only thing I would say is Ms. Granger from our office has recommended, and I believe that there are a lot of related bills on manufactured housing. I know Mr. Miner has some of his own that probably would serve the legislature best if they all went together.
Sure. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Next up will be Don Miner, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Don Miner. I'm here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association. Our association represents manufacturers, retailers, lenders, providers of homes. Generally, we don't speak for the community interest or the facility interest. We don't support the bill as drafted. We have a number of concerns. The premise appears to be that there's something inherently wrong or dangerous with placing a home in a manufactured home park. Now, I recognize that there are some extreme difficulties in that area of the market at this time, but you don't have to go back more than a couple of years when homes were rapidly appreciating in facilities. People were waiting in line, clamoring to move into manufactured home parks. If I could just address some issues that have been brought up, Representative Merkley's and giving you an owner's sales agreement, earnest money receipt, essentially allows the rescission right if there's an inspection, that inspector reports a material defective condition or lead-based paint. So it's not, that isn't the same as to say that if you buy a home that you have a unilateral right to rescind a contract. It's my understanding that you don't have such a right, but I'm not all that familiar with real estate transactions. I would also point out that not all folks who buy homes are represented by an agent. I know that the site-built home I had previous to the one I'm in today, I sold personally. I suspect Ms. Jarvis wouldn't appreciate hearing that, but sold that myself to a purchaser who was not represented either, so neither side. So not all real property transactions is the consumer represented by an agent. If I could just address the bill specifically, the right to cancel contained in Section 1, by the way, we would support the revisions of taking out the related party. That was very, very unclear what that all dealt with. And so the bill is clear with that out. But I assume then if a private person sells a manufactured home that is or will be placed in a park, and presumably all of those would be in parks, that a purchaser from a private party would have a 3-day right to rescind also, and that might create some dislocations. I know that maybe it's unique to me, but I know that oftentimes when I engage in a major purchase, I suffer a little bit of buyer's remorse. So such a right, though, as applied to a private party could create a lot of harms. At page 2, line 14, the bill provides that a financial institution doing business in this state may not close a loan for the purchase while the purchaser has a right to rescind. How would a lender become aware as to whether or not that right to rescind had run? The bill doesn't really provide for that. So how does a lender know, I guess, is the question. In addition, during this rescission right, if a consumer has bought a home, presumably have arranged for financing, but it appears to me there isn't a deal until this period has run. If the interest rate changes, what is the interest rate that will be provided to the purchaser? If it goes up, is he stuck? I know that when I have bought property, I usually pay an extra fee to lock in an interest rate. But that would appear to me to be an issue. At page 1, line 8, it provides that the consumer has 3 days to rescind after they sign the agreement, I think the language is. After they sign the purchase agreement. Oftentimes, these are a negotiated purchase that goes over a protracted period of time. Most folks don't walk in and say, I will buy that 1,800 square foot house, here's the money, or here, let's sign right now. It doesn't work that way. It's a negotiated process. And at some point, there is the signing of an agreement. Oftentimes, though, those agreements get modified. The consumer decides that he likes the burnt orange carpet more than the green carpet. And so the agreement will be modified. Does the 3 days start running from that period? Assuming interest rate has been agreed on, if the interest rate goes up or down, and that's reflected in the agreement, does the period start running again? It seems to me that that has to be worked out is what do you mean? If it were from the initial contact, that might be more workable. But as it's written, it seems to me very difficult to see how that works out. During the this rescission period, the consumer comes in and says, I will pay you $20,000 for that house sitting up front there. And they presumably then have this 3-day right to rescind. If another purchaser comes in and offers more, better offer, can the seller walk away from the first purchaser and sell it to the second purchaser? It's unclear. Is the seller locked in? Is this a unilateral right to rescind? What if the price goes up during that time? Is the new price going to be the price that is charged? The bill also provides 3 days to rescind after they signed the rental agreement. So it looks like there's multiple rescission periods here. again, how would the retailer know if that has or has not been revoked? If another tenant comes in, another resident, prospective resident comes forward, does the landlord now have a right to revoke his agreement with the first prospective tenant and take the second? It seems to me that needs to be taken care of. Another question is, are the three-day rescission periods consecutive? Do they run at the same time? If you bought the home from a dealer outside that's to be placed in a park and you sign a rental agreement, how do those dates mesh? It could, referring to the class, those classes, our experiences, they do not exist. The state of Oregon Housing and Community Services has given us a grant of about $25,000, which we give to folks, first-time home buyers, lesser incomes, to help them get started in housing. But they're only able to access that money if they've taken the classes. We've made one grant in about 2 years because the classes just generally aren't available. If I could just remark back and close before I close to the Mr. Ebersole's remarks on the fees that get passed on to consumers, the systems development charges, that could get on my soapbox for a minute. The family buying a very, very modest single-family home to be placed in a park, let's say they pay $10,000, $20,000. In this city, I believe, would pay $11,000 in systems development charges to the city of Salem. A person building a $500,000 home, a $1 million home in the city of Salem pays the same amount, not the same percentage, the same amount. So there's some very regressive things going on in that market. I will say that whether it's a site built or a factory built, whether it's a factory built home in a park or out of a park, generally the home buyer pays those costs. I'm not sure that that really has much to do with this bill at all. I could then summarize just the working of this bill. It seems to me a lot of clarification needs to be done. The effects on the purchaser, what happens during these rescission periods, if prices change, interest rates change, a better buyer comes along, et cetera. Those things all need to be worked out. And with that, I would conclude my remarks.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Berard.
Donna, you threw about, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 different kinds of scenarios about when things could occur. And maybe I'm just being naive, but under this law, I don't think it says you have an agreement until the 3 days is up. And if you apply that scenario, all of your questions are answered. I mean, that's what this is saying. You don't have an agreement until the 3 days is up, then you have an agreement. So I would assume that whatever interest rates, et cetera, were applicable on that date, that's the day you have an agreement. And on your comments about system development charges, your beef is not with the state of Oregon, no. It's with the city of Salem and the county of Marion County. So,
Mr. Chair, if I might respond to that.
Sure.
The bill doesn't make that clear, though, that there is no agreement until the periods run. And even if that is clarified then, though, it still doesn't answer the question, is there agreement if the agreement is modified subsequent to its initial signing? It seems to me that still is an issue. Those things could be clarified, and I would suggest to clarify them towards making the right to rescind bilateral.
Thank you. Representative Sullivan.
Thank you. Mr. Miner, I've actually never participated directly in the purchase of a manufactured home, although my father did probably 25 or 30 years ago. So I'm not actually familiar entirely with, you know, sale process, but I obviously recognize that you don't have an unlimited inventory. I mean, so your comment about you having a manufactured home on site that's for sale, I'm assuming that price would be subject to negotiation, correct? And also if you had certain homes on site for sale and a purchaser came in and they said they'd take that house but the agreement wasn't effective for 3 days, you would actually be turning away buyers for that sale, wouldn't you, during that period of time? And if that buyer rescinded, you would be out the sale. Is that...
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, I believe that's the case, that as written, and that was that kind of a basis for my suggestion that the right to rescind be bilateral, that both the seller and the purchaser have an unconditional right to rescind the transaction, which essentially then, you know, when is there ever a contract? And it's, but it would be my suggestion to retailers that you certainly wouldn't begin to, most often these homes aren't in a park. Oftentimes there's a model home and they order a home to be built. Should this go forward, my suggestion would be that you not begin the ordering process, certainly. That the retailer or the seller not take any steps to commit himself until the period is run.
Mr. Chairman, we can also get one issue on the record for clarification.
Sure.
Systems development charges are based on the impact that the dwelling and the occupants of that dwelling would have on certain services. So the occupants of a three-bedroom manufactured home would have the same impacts normally as the occupants of a three-bedroom stick home, regardless of what the price is. That's been an issue debated in the legislature quite a few times, and it's been the position of the development industry that the prices should be based on the actual impacts, not on the value of the dwelling being purchased.
Thank you.
But it is an issue for affordable housing. I recognize that.
Representative Doyle.
Thank you. I guess one clarification for me, I mean, I guess my understanding of contract law just looking at this bill is that this bill only provides the right to rescind an agreement that's signed for this 3 days. So my thought would be that there is an agreement and it's only after 3 days that it can be rescinded, not that, you know, I guess the agreement starts on the third day. But I think one of my concerns is how much or how often are we in Oregon experiencing, you know, some kind of immediate sale of a manufactured home that somebody could then ultimately experience as buyer's remorse or, you know, have other concerns that they want to withdraw from an agreement, as opposed to, you know, those who come in and just take a little time to deliberate or go through even a process of, you know, even coming back a couple of times to see if this is what they really want to do. Do you have any thoughts from your...
Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, I believe that it's generally a protracted period. Folks don't usually come in and buy. It's not an impulse decision. It's just simply not an impulse decision. This isn't like a door-to-door or a home solicitation where somebody will sign just to make them leave the home. This is a circumstance where a person's actually gone into a business that's in the business of selling stuff and made a decision to buy. And you probably have a better reading than I that there isn't a contract until the third day is run, and if that were the case, we'd want to have that established on the record.
Actually, I think I said it just the opposite. Mm-hmm. The contract's effective unless it's rescinded. But
then that goes to my concern, Mr. Chair, that it's almost like a unilateral right to cancel. And it seems to me that that makes this a lot more complicated. If the interest rate goes up, et cetera, the price changes. And those things do happen, unfortunately.
Thank you. Representative Mark.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Meyer, I try to draw parallels between this and the real estate contracts wherein if you've got a contract and there are conditions yet to be met, such as loan approval, the seller may take backup offers within that period of time, and indeed the manufacturing the seller of this home could manufactured dwelling could take backup offers. But if the conditions are met, and this is one condition that they have 3 days for a waiver, I don't see that it would create a whole new set of problems. And I also don't, once they'd signed that agreement and they changed, you're simply, you know, and the 3 days had expired And it's pretty easy for a loan officer, for example, to know that, well, there's 3 days between here and here, and after that we can close the loan. So I don't see that as a problem. But, and I also don't see the problem of changing carpet color. I see that as an addendum to the original sale, not changing the whole contract. So, I mean, some of these things I think are, you know, I think you can probably work them out. Have you gotten together with Representative Merkley and talked about some of these, how to work out some of these difficulties?
Mr. Chair, Representative March, no, we haven't.
Okay.
But I think that those things are items that should be clarified if the bill goes forward.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for your testimony. Next up, I'd like to have Bob Riefenstahl, Director of Housing and Community Services, for just a few seconds here.
Mr. Chairman, good morning,
or good afternoon.
Bob Riefenstahl, Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. I understand you were looking for me, so your able-bodied staff tackled me in the hallway.
Thank you. I wanted to ask you a question about a segment of this bill that doesn't seem to have much popular support here, but I wanted to just get you on record anyway. And Section 3 of this bill refers to Housing and Community Services developing a special one-hour class for persons considering purchasing a manufactured dwelling or rental space in a manufactured dwelling park. If they took that class from you, they would be able to waive the right of rescission here. It also says the department may charge a reasonable fee for attendance at the class. Department shall provide each person attending the class with written and dated documentation of attendance. Again, I say I don't think that aspect of this bill has much popular support here, but just briefly, what would that be like for your department if you were to do something like that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In assessing Section 3, as I've read it and as you have portrayed it, issues, the Representative Markley and my department haven't had a lot of discussion about this bill, but so if there is pleasure or interest in that section being redefined or recrafted, we would be happy to work on coming up with something that has mutual understanding. A couple of things that I see with this, just on the short time I've had a chance to review it, is first of all, the issue about reasonable charge is always in the eyes of the beholder. We have other programs that we have that are similar to this. We offer for first-time homebuyer participants, we have a program called the ABCs of Home Buying, which is a program that you go to and pay a fee to be able to get some assistance either in your down payment or some deviation of your interest rate from a lender. So we have similar programs, so it's not like we've not done this. We do not put the classes on. That's one distinct difference. That's usually the classes are accomplished by housing advocates or people who have an affiliate for making people have the opportunity to be in affordable housing, or banks or mortgage companies or savings and loans would offer these classes. So we don't have that infrastructure out in the field to be offering classes. And when you talk about it, says in each area of the state, that also is in the eyes of the beholder. The state can be divided a variety of equal areas. It could be one, or it could be 36, or any other denominator probably between those points. So that would probably be something that would have to be more clearly expressed. Again, if you think about Eastern Oregon and travel, if you said that a area in the state is such as Burns, but that means that people all the way from Harney or from LeGrand would have to come down to that class based on the ability to put a class on that made sense to have the reasonable amount of attendees in it. So it makes financial sense. That would be an issue we would want to deal with. The other part that creates an interesting dilemma is that thinking out past this, it says that in the sections above it, Section 1, Sub 2 on line 9, it talks about that the person has to show or attest that they had taken this program 12 months prior. That becomes somewhat speculative, I would imagine, also from the standpoint and the demand or the urgency. I can see where somebody could come in and they're in this position to do make this acquisition, and they want to prevail or use this section to get this the three-day waiver, but the next class isn't for another 2 months or 3 months, and it may not be geographically located conveniently. So there's a whole series of
complexities with how we would go about doing it. Not to say that it couldn't be accomplished, because we have a education program, as I said before, in the ABCs of home buying that we offer statewide. It's done through not the agency, but through cooperation with lending institutes. And so probably there are other ways to create those partnerships to deliver a program similar to this.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Next to testify will be Fred and Pat Schwab, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Wilson and committee. My name is Fred Schwach. I'm with Manufactured Homeowners of Oregon. I'd like to relate to you a case that I know personally. One of my co-workers' children agreed to purchase a manufactured home. They were handed the keys, told to move in. Well, kids being naive, they took everybody at their word. When they got the papers, oh, and signed the rental agreement. When they got the papers, they discovered that after the first year, their interest rate would go from 8% to 23%. And they said, no way, this isn't what we were told. So they moved out, and they threatened the dealer with a suit for fraud. So he backed out. But the park owner said, no, you've got a contract. So it took a letter from an attorney that works with Manufactured Homeowners of Oregon to get him to back out. Well, the only reason that these kids were able to get help is because their mother, who I said was my co-worker, said, Fred, I understand you know something about this. Where can we get help? This really bothered me. The first-time home buyer is extremely vulnerable because, boy, they think they're going to move in and they're going to have the first crack at home ownership and so on. And the only problem I have with the bill is the 3 days should be 7 days instead of three to let people really think it through, and particularly these young kids, first-time home buyers, they aren't nearly as savvy or jaded as I am, that's obvious, but I know that case firsthand, and I feel these kids need some protection.
Yes, for the record, my name is Pat Schwach. Good afternoon, Chairman Wilson and committee. I'm the other half of this duo. I find two things that bother me about what goes on with packages that these people buy. A lot of the people that we see are young people, as Fred mentioned. And they suddenly think that they're going to be able to become homeowners and begin to establish their life. And what they don't understand is that there's a lot of paperwork to read when they buy these houses. There's sheets of paper to read. And additionally, as I've said, when Fred and I first moved into a park some 14 years ago, they handed me a one-page rental agreement and two pages of rules, and that's all. When you move into a park now, the rental agreement is 7 pages long in most instances. The rules can be anywhere 25, 26 pages, plus an additional number of pages for a statement of policy. And I think people find that very difficult to read all of that. The other class of people who move into manufactured home parks are those of us who've raised our kids and we want to downsize and we'd like to live in something smaller with less yard and less stuff to take care of. And because we've lived in our houses all these years on our own ground, it doesn't occur to us that we're suddenly going to be faced with all kinds of rules that we need and should have taken a good look at to decide about. I think that this bill that Representative Merkley has put together with a lot of the support from the legislators is something that's long overdue and something that we certainly would support.
Thank you. Go ahead,
Chairman, may I add one thing? Somebody mentioned a stick-built house that you can forfeit your earnest money. That is not the case in buying a manufactured home.
Yeah.
So that's one option that we don't have.
Yeah.
Questions?
Representative Doyle.
Thank you. Curious on the, as you're talking about the rental agreement and Parkbeck, the whole thing that comes together, I guess as I look at the bill, there's two different segments. One is that it's the ability to rescind the purchase agreement, mm-hmm. and that's just the actual purchase of the
unit,
mm-hmm. Versus, and then I guess also they also have the opportunity to rescind the rental agreement.
Right.
Do you see, that it's more appropriate to have the ability to rescind the rental agreement more than rescinding a purchase agreement?
It's kind of, Chairman Wilson and Representative Doyle, it's kind of a catch-22, I think. I need to back up a little bit. I think that what's happened with the industry as itself now is because of the Attorney General's task force, that we've cleaned up that end of it quite a little bit. But one of the things that I have not seen any changes in are the rental agreements that are handed off to people. And they are so lengthy and so all-encompassing that I think both of these issues need to be addressed. The fact that if I decide I am going to pay interest I didn't expect to pay, that I can get out of this mess and have buyer's remorse, I guess.
I'd like to add one thing, if I may, Chair Wilson, to answer Representative Doyle's question. The thing is, because you buy the home and you rent the space, those two are so intertwined. If a house deal falls apart, I don't have a house to put on this space. And if the rental agreement is not satisfactory, I have no need to buy the home. So they're so intertwined, I don't see how you can separate them, frankly.
Chairman, I have a question for the committee. I'm just curious about, and maybe Representative Doyle can answer this, why have these agreements grown from such simple documents to such thick documents with requiring so many different things? And I guess my question is, are those a result of legislation in the state requiring more and more?
I would hazard a guess and say it's probably, that certainly has something to do with it, but I think everything else that I involve myself with in this day and age has about 10 times more paper than it did 10 years ago. So it just seems to be the way things are going.
Absolutely.
Okay, no further questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Susan. I will let you help us with your last name. I hate to mispronounce people's names.
Delatour, sir.
Delatour? Thank you.
Susan Delatour, for the record, speaking in favor of this. When I bought my manufactured home 18 years or so ago, my rental agreement was 1 8.5 by 14 piece of paper. Rental agreement on one side, rules and regs on the other. The rental agreement now in that park is 4 pages of rental agreement and I believe 18 or 19 pages of rules and regulations, some of which are not only unconscionable but in a couple of places are illegal. There's a suit going on in that park now over the rental agreement. The people that signed it without knowing, whether it's the little old ladies that don't understand, or and mine is a 55 plus park, they sit down with the park manager, sign here and here and here. Oh, okay, you know, you must know, and so it's got to be right, and it's certainly legal. They don't know, and by the time they find out, they've signed it and they're stuck with it. No one can wade through that amount of stuff in that length of time. It's just not even possible. So that waiting period, I think, is imperative. If I went into another park now and was presented with 30 pages of stuff, even with my experience having bought a manufactured home and working with OSTA, I don't know that I would catch everything, let alone somebody that has never done this before, totally unsophisticated new purchaser. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up will be Chuck Carpenter and Al Conley, please. MHCO. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Chuck Carpenter, Executive Director of Manufactured Housing Communities of Oregon, Salem, Oregon. We represent over 550 communities here in the state of Oregon. We appreciate the opportunity to come here today to testify on this bill. One of the things we would like to mention to the committee, Mr. Chair, is that there is the ongoing coalition meeting that meets once a week to talk about a variety of issues. We would like to have this issue brought up in the coalition for further discussion and to try to have it included in the coalition bill that hopefully will come out before you sometime here this spring. Inherently, we don't have a problem with the three-day rescission, but we would like to have that discussed in the coalition meeting and try to maybe get some clarifying language. We, as well, MHCO, does have concerns with the training aspect, or the class aspect of this, where the state would be providing classes to people who decided who would want to waive their right to the rescission. But to the rescission itself, certainly we're willing to look at that and to work on that, and the coalition have that included in the coalition bill and do it through that process.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman. My name's Alan Conley. I'm a mobile home park owner from Albany. I'm also the chairman of the Legislative Committee for MHCO. Along with our 550 parks we represent about 35,000 spaces, which is about half or a little over half of all the spaces in the state. I have some concerns with this bill as a park operator, just how it would affect me and my operation. And that it's not precise. I'm concerned about waiving revisions. If we're going to have a waiting period, let's just have a waiting period. Keep it simple. A couple of other things that I would like to address here was questions about the size of the rental agreements. And here's my 26-page beauty. I started with one 26 years ago. I don't know if there's any correlation there. Almost everything that's in here that's caused this to grow has been the result of folks like you making decisions of how I'm going to run my business, just as we're talking about doing now. Whatever we do here today will create more language that will add at least a page to this agreement. In this agreement, I have at least two places at the end of my statement of policy and at the end of the rental agreement itself, language above their signatures requesting that the person signing this seek legal advice before entering into this agreement. Two places. And in 26 years, I'm not aware of anyone that's ever actually done that. So we can protect folks as much as we can protect folks, but at some point, they need to accept some responsibility for themselves. This, if you choose to go forward with this bill, there's some things in here that I don't know if it was intended or not. It would appear to me that this would affect private sales between just private individuals selling. There'd be the three-day waits in there for that. If you go through with the class idea, of course, in the state, I think would have some responsibility on ensuring that people are well educated. There's language in here that requires each person entering into the agreement to, if they waive, to have attended the class. So I'm thinking if I rented the space to a married couple and only one of them attended the class, then the other one would have the right to rescind that agreement. So there's things here that don't look good to me in this. As far as the size of these things, the residents don't like the size of these agreements. The landlords don't either. I would love to be able to go back to one page. If you guys can write it that way, I'll sure support it. There are probably 65,000 to 68,000 spaces in the park. I don't think the majority of those folks are having problems. I think we're hearing from a rather small, less than 10% minority of people that are having problems. I don't have anything else to add. I'd be happy to answer. Oh, one other thing I would like to add, yes. People don't just walk into a park and put their money down and rent a space. They're going to come in, they're going to make application. We're going to talk to them, decide if we want to rent to them. We're going to do checks on them, a credit check, a criminal check, and a rental history check. This all takes time. People have some cooling off time here, whether they have an additional 3 days or not. I'm not sure how this process would work. If I were the applicant, I wouldn't put my money up for the checks, to pay for the checks, until I'd made up my mind whether I was going to rescind the rental agreement, and I wouldn't enter into the rental agreement until I knew that I was accepted into the park. So we have a little bit of a push and shove on that issue. That's about all I have.
Thank you. Have any questions? Representative Doyle.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Colley, I wasn't sure if you were thanking us for all the work we've done to get you up to 26 pages or not. If you were, you're welcome.
Okay.
curious about your perspective on having a, like a process where people are putting down some kind of a an interest money type thing or retainer to hold the property or hold
the space.
For this 3-day period to basically guarantee it versus, just keeping it open for 3 days, and what your experience would be if, that people are saying, well, yeah, I want this, but now I'm going to wait 3 days, and then you have somebody else come in and says they want it, and how you deal with something like that.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Doyle, I don't think I have a ready answer for that because we're kind of plowing new ground here. Certainly in today's market, we don't have people lined up to rent spaces. When the time comes that there's that kind of a demand, I don't know. I've just never had people competing for spaces. I really can't answer you on that.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Last person on my list today is Tim Martinez. Tim?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Tim Martinez, Oregon Bankers Association. I would just like to briefly let the committee know we have no position on this bill at the moment. Our lending committee actually looked at it earlier today wanted to work with the proponents to try to figure out some of the issues that Don talked about. I would tell you that we're not as concerned about them as perhaps Mr. Miner is. We think they are all workable. The one issue that I would like to bring to your attention is the class training that's in the bill. We would most likely treat all borrowers the same, and we would assume that they did not have the class, rather than set up two different processes within the bank and get into all those issues. You know, if it's a husband and wife, did they both attend, did they both need to attend? Rather than go down that road, we would just tell all the borrowers more than likely that they would have a 3-day rescission period. So just would like the committee to be aware of that. But I do believe this is something that we can work out with the proponents.
Any questions? All right. Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2847. And committee, thank you for your attention, and I want to thank all of you for your testimony today. I think we've thoroughly heard that issue. Appreciate it. Anything from the committee for the committee?
I was just hoping to get one of those 26-page documents so we could pare it down for them.
Be nice. I'd like to try. All right. Committee is adjourned. Thank you.